Welcome to the Strategy Driven Podcast, How to Better Engage Employees. On behalf of the entire Strategy Driven team, I would like to welcome you to this edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast. How to Better Engage Employees. The Strategy Driven Podcast focuses on the tools and techniques executives and managers can use to improve their organization's alignment and accountability to ultimately achieve superior results. These podcasts elaborate on the best practice and warning flag articles found on the Strategy Driven website at www.strategydriven.com. In this episode, Michael Lee Stallard, co-founder and president of E Pluribus Partners, shares with us his insights on employee engagement. In this, the second of a series of employee engagement podcasts, we explore the actions executives and managers can take to better engage their employees, revealing how to improve employee satisfaction, productivity, retention, and ultimately, the bottom line. So without any further delays, let's get started. We are privileged to be joined by Michael Lee Stallard, principal author of Fired Up or Burned Out, and co-founder and president of E Pluribus Partners, a consulting firm specializing in helping leaders create connection cultures to form strong bonds among management, employees, and customers of an organization. Michael's work has been featured in The Wall Street Journal, The New York Times, Leader to Leader, Human Resource Executive, and Fox Business Now. He has spoken at conferences organized by the Conference Board, GE, Google, NASA, Johnson & Johnson, and Yale New Haven Hospital. Michael, welcome back to the Strategy Driven Podcast.
Nathan, it's a pleasure to be with you.
It's great to have you back. I know in our pre-show discussion, we were just discussing how important the topic of engaging workers is and how so often we're both seeing folks leaving or seeking to leave large corporations to go to smaller ones or even to start their own business. So really glad to have you on the show for what I believe is a very timely discussion on employee engagement.
Well, I couldn't agree more. There's research that's come out recently, Nathan, that in January of this year, the Conference Board, I spoke at a Conference Board conference a few weeks ago in New York City, and they came out with a report in January that said employee engagement is at the lowest level since they started surveying more than 20 years ago.
Wow.
So it certainly is very timely for us to have this discussion this morning.
This is great. And as our listeners probably already know, this is the second in our series of podcasts on the various aspects of employee engagement. So I was hoping to kick us off today. You might talk about what benefits you see organizations realize as a result of better engaging their employees.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me just start out as we get into benefits, talk a little bit about, let me bring up some additional research that I think is very relevant and points to the benefits.
Okay.
Last year, the Corporate Executive Board, a different group from the Conference Board, the Corporate Executive Board came out with a report, very prestigious think tank just outside of Washington, D.C., and they concluded that on average, 75% of employees are not engaged in their work. They're not giving their best efforts. And
okay.
Of the 25%, Nathan, who are engaged, 40% of them are not aligned with organizational goals. Now, when you combine those two statistics, as the Corporate Executive Board did, they concluded that 90% of employees are either not engaged in giving their best efforts or they're not aligned with organizational goals. 90%. So only 1 out of 10 employees are what corporate executive board calls mobilized employees. In other words, they're mm-hmm. giving their best efforts and they're focused on organizational goals. Now, that's pathetic, isn't it? But it also points to the potential benefits if we get employee engagement and alignment right. And the benefits are, number one, people are focusing on everybody's pulling together in the right direction,
mm-hmm.
and they're giving their best efforts. That spills over and affects productivity. It also affects innovation because people have to be active to innovate. And if they're just showing up for the paycheck, they don't tend to be innovators. And then finally, of course, if you have a higher degree of strategic alignment, employee engagement, productivity, and innovation, that always spills over to higher profitability.
And just the fact that 90% of our folks are not what I call helping row the boat in the direction the company's trying to go. That's a huge opportunity to realize an incredible return on investment in increased productivity alone.
Yeah, it is. I was just meeting with Jim Goodnight, the founder and CEO of SAS Institute, and mm-hmm. SAS was recognized this year by Fortune magazine as the number one workplace. And Jim is, you know, he has a PhD in statistics. He's a very rational manager.
Mm-hmm.
And he was telling me that years ago, early in his career, he had worked for a subcontractor at NASA. And he said, you know, it was just a dismal work environment where everybody was in a cubicle farm. And he said employee turnover is like 50%. And it didn't take a rocket scientist to see that you could improve productivity and innovation in the workplace if you had a better work environment. So when he founded SAS Institute, after he and a group of professors founded SAS, they were all at North Carolina State University,
mm-hmm.
he wanted to create a culture where employees felt valued, because that's what he wanted as well. And he knew that that it would have a positive effect on organizational performance. And they've had something like 30 years of growing profits and revenues, and just recognized as a very innovative company that's, you know, when you look at all the accolades they're receiving, just a great organization. And Jim attributes it to creating a workplace to attract and retain and motivate employees. So it's... Jim is a great example of an entrepreneur who really gets it and is very rational about managing his business. These are not soft factors. They're hard factors when it comes to the bottom line.
Certainly. Something that you can go out and very easily measure over time. Yeah.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Now, Mike, in my experience, trust and respect for one's immediate supervisor is the most significant factor in creating employee engagement, again, at least within the organizations that I've worked with. What do you see as being the most significant driver of employee engagement with the organizations that you've worked with, and why is that factor so important?
Well, Nathan, you're absolutely right. The immediate supervisor is the most important factor, individual, in when it comes to employee engagement and strategic alignment. And that's because that immediate supervisor has a huge impact on, you know, people watch that individual to see how they behave, what their values are. That individual is largely responsible for hiring in the work group. And this is a good time mm-hmm. to just point out that employee engagement tends to be driven by the local culture. It's, you know, certainly there's a meta culture effect, the overall culture of the organization. But just stop and think about it. I always get this question when I'm out speaking at conferences and teaching workshops, you know, doesn't this have to start at the top? And the answer is absolutely no. It does not have to start at the top. You can create islands of engagement. Just think about your own experience.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at work groups, you'll find some that are completely fired up and highly productive and connected to one another. And then you may walk down the hall and find a work environment that is draining the life out of the people who are a part of it.
Oh, yeah.
And it tends to be driven by the supervisor. So the supervisor, as you point out, is the number one factor in determining things like the values of the work group, the individuals who are in the work group, and also work assignments, you know, getting people in the right role, helping them see that their work is meaningful, and removing obstacles, making sure that they have the tools they need to get their job done. And if obstacles come up that prevent an employee from getting the work that's done, that's expected of them, then that supervisor needs to be active to remove those obstacles. So those types of factors are really why the immediate supervisor is the most important element in the work environment to create a culture where people give their best efforts and align their behavior with organizational goals.
Mm-hmm. You know, as you were describing that, it brought back a situation for me that occurred years ago. I was in the Navy, and I was qualifying to be the chief nuclear engineer officer on my submarine. And as part of that process, you had to do interviews with the different commanding officers at the subbase. And I went to go on to one submarine, never been on it before, to interview with this commanding officer. And it was amazing. I would pass people in the hallways who would tell me how lucky I was to be able to see their CO for a little bit of time. And then when I met the man, it was really clear why that was. And I didn't spend but an hour with him, and I was wishing I could have been on his boat. He was just so motivating and engaging. It was like walking down the hallway and hear this one leader out of all of them in all the different areas was the one that was really highly motivating and engaging. And it wasn't something that you picked up over time. It was a very immediate experience.
Right. Well, Nathan, that's a great example, and I'm glad you brought that up. It's another thing that you see in great leaders, regardless of the level they're at in an organization, is they tend to get out and they connect personally with the people they're responsible for leading. And it doesn't always mean one-to-one. In fact, I have an article that's coming out in the summer edition of Leader to Leader, the journal that was founded by Peter Drucker. And in the article, I talk about Admiral Vern Clark. Admiral Clark became the chief of Navy operations, you know, the head of the Navy, the Joint Chiefs, in 2000. And at that time, the Navy was not meeting its retention goals. The overall first-term reenlistment goal for the Navy is 38%, and they were not meeting that. And it was starting to, they were concerned about the effect it had on military preparedness.
Sure.
So when Admiral Clark became CNO, he made winning the war on talent his number one priority. And he went out and visited with the, you know, met with the master chiefs, who were the leaders of the enlisted class, and asked them to be active in engaging and helping the members of the enlisted class learn and grow and become the people and the sailors they were capable of becoming. And he told a story about how when on his first command, he had a master chief on board who came up to him about a week after and put his arm around Admiral Clark, what was an admiral then, but and said, you know, Mr. Clark, I like you, and I'm going to help make you a fine officer and a fine leader. And he said this master chief helped him become a better leader and really had a profound impact on his career as a leader. And he asked the master chiefs to do that, to really be active and engaged and present with the enlisted sailors under their command. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the result was in about 18 months, the master chiefs, you know, number one, they didn't always get that kind of attention from a CNO that was
right
there.
Oh, absolutely.
And they, you know, they knew that Admiral Clark, or Old Vern as they called him, was counting on them, and they really made a difference. In 18 months, first-term reenlistment went from under 38% to 56%. Within, inside of 2 years, the Navy had more sailors than they knew what to do with, and this is all before 91, or I mean all before September 11, because, you know, you had the patriotic effect that kicked in after the attack on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, and first-term reenlistment went sore. But, you know, here's a leader who was present, like you said, and was out connecting with the people he was responsible for leading. So that's something you see with all leaders. So thanks for bringing that up.
Well, Michael, now recognizing the supervisor and their work with the employees as being so critical to engaging workers, Is there some other actions that you would recommend that these leaders take to foster the type of work environment that's engaging to employees?
Well, let me take this opportunity. I can get into some specific actions in a little bit, but let me take this opportunity to talk about what actions need to do in order to engage people. And that is, we've identified in our research 6 universal human needs to thrive at work. And these are needs, they're not wants of people. If these needs are not met, then people dysfunction. And they don't perform at the top of their game. They become lethargic. They become disconnected. They start to lose their passion. And it's interesting, in most businesses, you see this starts to happen in about 6 months after a new employee starts. They come in highly engaged, but within 6 months, you see a big drop in engagement. Mm-hmm. Now, the universal needs are, the first 3 are relational needs, respect, recognition, and belonging. I won't get into the details of those. You know, there's articles on our website and in our book that go into details. But basically, people want to be, you know, if you're in an environment that's patronizing or people look down on you in some way, then that has a negative effect on your performance. You also want to be recognized. It's like we have this battery in our back that needed to be charged, the recognition battery.
Yes.
And we need that. And then finally, we need to be a part of we need a group of people who have our back in business and in life, because we all go through difficult times. And we just tend to get through those difficult times if we have a group of people who we belong to, in a sense. They're a part of our team. And the next 2 needs are what we call task mastery needs. The first is autonomy. We need the freedom to do our work. And that is coupled with personal growth. We need to be in a role that's a good fit with our strengths. Not over-challenging so that we're stressed out, or under-challenging so that we're bored, but in the sweet spot of challenge so that we become immersed in the work and time flies by when we're in the right role. And then finally, the need for meaning is the last of the 6 universal human needs to thrive at work. We're focused on something that is work that's important to us in some way, that connects with our lives, where we want to give our best efforts. We, no surprise, we do give our best efforts, and we tend to persevere more. So those are the 6 universal human needs. And any behaviors that a leader or coworker does that helps meet those needs will help the overall workplace in terms of productivity and innovation and overall performance.
Okay. Now, Michael, in your work, you've highlighted the importance of a connection culture, which to me is more than just actions of a leader. It's also the shared beliefs of the entire workforce. It's how individuals within the organization interact with each other. It's how they value each other. It's the organization's work environment. Would you describe for the audience what a connection culture is and why it's so powerful and engaging employees?
Sure, Nathan. It's let me just step back 1 second. The conference board, it was interesting, when we did our research, at the same time the conference board was looking at definitions of employee engagement, and they concluded, here's their definition of employee engagement after they looked at all the definitions they could find.
Okay.
They concluded that employee engagement is a heightened emotional and intellectual connection that an employee has for his or her job, organization, manager, or coworkers that in turn influences him or her to apply additional discretionary effort to his or her work. Now, that's you'll not find a better definition for employee engagement than that. And I believe it is, because it's consistent with, we were not aware of the conference board's research when we were doing our own research. And we also concluded that employee engagement was based on these rational and emotional connections. And they tend to happen in a culture that we describe as a connection culture. Now, connection is, let me just define that, because I'm using that term a lot. Connection is a bond that's based on shared identity, empathy, and understanding. And this bond moves self-centered individuals toward group-centered membership. In other words, to use Phil Jackson, the old coach of the Bulls and presently the coach of the Los Angeles Lakers, talks about sacrificing the me for the we. Well, that's what happens in a connection culture, that people feel that they're part of something that's greater than themselves, and they want the overall organization to succeed. So that's what we focus on, is this connection, these emotional and rational connections. And by the way, research has shown that emotional connections are four times as important as rational connections when it comes to the amount of effort that people put into their work.
And of course, it's that discretionary effort, or as you described it earlier, that effort in creativity, that giving of one's entire self, that really is what propels companies forward and makes them more productive, more innovative, and just more successful overall in the workplace.
Right, absolutely. And a connection culture, just to provide a little bit more detail, is comprised of, we don't have time to get into all of the elements, but there are five elements. Let me just tell you about what we call the core elements.
Okay.
And we simplify them with terms of vision, value, and voice, because that's very easy to remember. There's a little more sophisticated terms that we use, but vision, value, and voice for our purposes this morning is a good way to remember them.
Okay.
And vision exists when people are motivated by the mission, united by the values, and proud of the organization's reputation. Value exists when people understand the human needs of others at work, you know, the needs that I mentioned earlier, the six universal human needs to thrive at work. And they also appreciate their positive, unique contributions, and they help their colleagues achieve their potential rather than view them as rivals who they want to hold back. And then finally, voice exists when everyone seeks the ideas of others, they share their ideas and opinions honestly, and they safeguard relational connections. And that's a very important factor there, too, that just in communications and organizations, sometimes we say things that hurt someone else's feelings, and it breaks the connection between individuals. And then that results in knowledge traps starting to build, where people are withholding information that could help their colleagues make better decisions because they don't want to help them because somehow their feelings have been hurt or they feel they've been slighted. So that's part of our work, too, is helping organizations understand how these knowledge traps develop and what you can do to prevent them from occurring, because they'll hold you back and they'll eventually kill your organization if you don't, if they continue to build. It's almost like cholesterol in the bloodstream. You can have a heart attack organizationally if you're not intentional about building connection in the organization, which in a sense is like the statin drug of organizations to prevent heart attacks.
Right. And, you know, I tell people, you know, you want your organization to be such where people can have good, strong, professional disagreement, but to engage in a way that's constructive and ultimately uses that unique perspective and diversity to build something better rather than to be destructive to the organization and its efforts.
Yes, absolutely, Nathan. I think what most leaders, they also want that for the most part, but where we see they are held back is they're not intentional about developing it. They're intentional about developing task excellence, but unless you're intentional about developing relationship excellence by creating a connection culture, it does not happen. We don't drift toward excellence in anything, and that includes developing relationship excellence and connection in organizations. You have to be intentional about it, or it does not happen.
Well, for those executives and managers then who do want to create a connection culture, what are some of the things that they should do to foster and then maintain that kind of work environment?
Sure. Let me just give a couple. There are so, you know what is so fascinating, Nathan, about this whole area is there are literally hundreds of behaviors that promote connection. And it's just interesting to see how different leaders do that. And that's what we've been doing since we started studying this, is just studying great leaders throughout history and, meeting with leaders like Jim Goodnight, who I met with last week, and learning about how they promote connection. Let me just share a couple of ideas. And, of course, there's much more in our book and on our website. But one is what we call role in the whole, which, I have a little short phrases that help people remember these. Role in the whole, and that's R-O-L-E in the whole, W-H-O-L-E. And that means helping an employee see how they fit into the larger system, which means they need to understand the overall organization and how it works and what value it's providing, what customers it's benefiting. That helps them have a sense of meaning in their work and understanding how they're contributing to the whole. That's very important, and research has shown that that's a very important factor to give people perspective. Secondly, right role, R-I-G-H-T-R-O-L-E.
Okay.
And that just means getting people in the right role as a supervisor, taking the time to get to know someone's strengths, their passions, what their interests are, what their career aspirations are. Their journey, you know, getting to know their story. When you take the time to do that, then you can help. You can organize the workplace and put people in roles where they have a passion to give their best efforts. They really feel fired up, and that's critical. If you have them in the wrong, you know, they may show up for the paycheck, but they're not going to give their best efforts. And then taking time to connect with people as human beings. I think these days when we're pushing so much for productivity, we can lose sight of the importance of just spending time together as a team. You know, one of the things I recommend, this is a very simple thing, you know, order pizza for the team on Friday.
Sure.
And over lunch, just get everyone together. Order salad, too, because not everyone eats pizza.
Yeah.
And, you know, just take your time. I used to do this, and I loved doing this after I got used to it. And that is just kind of making my way around the room and finding out what people were doing in the weekend, you know, their lives outside of work. And that goes a long way, just helping make them feel connected to you. And what I found out is I eventually started to love that when I would slow down my mind long enough to take the time to do it. It really helped me connect with the employees that I was responsible for leading. So I highly recommend making sure that you take time every week to connect with the people, especially your direct reports, you know, in one-on-one meetings,
sure,
like a coffee or lunch or breakfast, something like that. But then also with the overall team, you know, have those Pizza Friday gatherings, or maybe a late Friday afternoon. I know they have like keggers and things out in Silicon Valley, so that's not a bad thing either. A good way to start the weekend. Another thing is grow or die. We all need to be growing and progressing in some way in our careers. So helping every employee understand how they're moving forward in their career and gaining new skills to help the organization and also help them advance in their careers. That's important. Here's another one, fist bump moments. You know, fist bump is the high five of today.
Yes.
And you know, you see that a lot in sports these days. Everybody's giving each other fist bumps. I saw the Jensen brothers. I don't know if you know them. They dominate men's doubles in tennis. And
okay.
Those guys must have given each other 100 fist bumps in a match. I've never seen anybody give so many fist bumps. But
yeah.
You know, it's just encouraging. It lifts our spirits when we do that. Look for opportunities to give employees and colleagues fist bumps. And then finally, keeping people in the loop and making sure you, in other words, you know, informing them on matters that are important to them, and ask them to contribute their ideas and opinions, and listen and consider them, because you always learn things that you weren't aware of that will help you make better decisions if you're active about doing that. And it really requires being active and setting up special times to communicate with employees and give them an opportunity to share their opinions and ideas. So those are just a few ideas that people can implement that will create a connection culture, improve strategic alignment, and employee engagement.
That's a great list of things that executives and managers can go out and implement right away. Now, Mike, here's a question, and this is sometimes gets into uncomfortable space for some leaders in organizations, but hiring, as we know it, is not an exact science. And in some of his writings and discussions, Jack Welch has suggested that even as a professional, and he certainly had a lot of hiring opportunities, he only gets it right about 40% of the time. What actions should executives and managers take if they've identified someone in their organization that doesn't fit or buy in or embrace the organization's connection culture?
Well, organizations, to create a connection culture, Nathan, they, you know, it's a combination of values in how you you know, behave on a day-to-day basis in the workplace. But it's also processes are important. And number one, organizations need to educate people to understand what the expectations are with respect to creating a connection culture. Number one, educate.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Secondly, they need to, I call this the four E's, Number one, educate. Number two, evaluate. You need to have, at least on an annual basis, employee engagement tests where you're holding people accountable and assessing them for the factors that create connection, which you find on employee engagement tests. Third, you need to encourage people on an ongoing basis to, if the evaluations come back that, and you see that a supervisor is struggling in this area, then you need to encourage and help and coach them to become better connectors. And finally, and this gets to Jack Welch, who I had the privilege of meeting some years ago, and I agree with Jack that if they don't embrace the values of connection, the values of the organization, then you need to resort to the finally, and that is you need to eject them. They're not a part of your culture, they're not part of your family in a sense, and they don't belong in your organization because they're going to do damage to it if they don't embrace the values.
Right. Now, we've spoken at length about culture and leadership, those sorts of aspects of employee engagement. There's some other areas that we haven't touched on, and I hoped we could just touch them for a second. And these get into things like HR policies and benefits and the like, things that are highly proceduralized or prescribed, kind of hard, tangible things that people can hold and feel. What do they have to do with employee engagement?
Well, they actually have some effect, but it's minimal. That's what we know from research, that these things like that you mentioned, HR policies and benefits, mm-hmm. they do have an effect on employee retention. But where they don't help, Nathan, is they don't help people. People will show up for the paycheck based on benefits and compensation,
yeah.
you know, the rational factors. But unless these emotional factors are met in the workplace, the soft, so-called soft factors, those mm-hmm. are the factors that are critical to getting people to give their best efforts and align their behavior with organizational goals. So I don't know about you, but I don't want, and I know this is true of you too, you don't want people just showing up for the paycheck. It's just
right.
when you're working around people who are giving their best efforts and trying to align their behavior with organizational goals, you know, it just fires you up to be around people like that.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, you feel like you're around teammates who are contributing. And so you really need to create this connection culture to deliver that. Having the right benefits and HR policy is not going to do it.
Right.
You'll get employees. You just won't get, you know, you won't get the type of performance you want.
Yeah, I've never made a stay decision with an organization based on HR policies and employee benefits and the like, or put in a lot of overtime hours because I thought, oh, hey, you know, we got a great vacation policy. It's always been the soft items of culture and connection to other folks that has motivated me to do those things.
Yeah, when we feel connected to an organization's mission, its reputation, its values, the people we're working with, our supervisor, and when we feel connected to the decision-making processes that we're in the loop and our opinions and ideas matter, that's what really fires us up.
Absolutely. Before we close, we've mentioned your website a few times during the course of our discussion, and your website is www.fireduporburnedout.com, and our listeners can go there and find a whole host of resources on engaging and motivating employees, including your very popular Connection Culture Manifesto. Mike, before we close, would you mind taking a moment and telling us a little bit about your website and the resource our audience members can find there?
Sure. We have several websites. You mentioned fireduporburnedout.com, Nathan, and that's, mm-hmm. That's our book website. It shows some of our upcoming events. It has articles, and it also has a link to my personal blog, which is michaelleestallard.com, and that has podcasts and webcasts, and just there's a whole host of resources available out there. And you mentioned the manifesto. That's probably the best introduction. It's a free e-book, and it's very brief. It was written for changethis.com, a site that Seth Godin started, and Seth encouraged me to write a manifesto, which I did, and it's been downloaded thousands of times worldwide. So I encourage people to take a look at that as a first step. It's called The Connection Culture, A New Source of Competitive Advantage. But if you go to firedupperburned.com or epluribuspartners.com, you'll see it prominently displayed, and you can download it there.
And we'll put links to the article that accompanies this podcast so our listeners can just very quickly click through and access your manifesto and both of your websites.
Great. Well, thanks, Nathan. I appreciate you making those available to your listeners.
Well, Mike, I want to thank you for taking the time this morning to talk to us and share your insights about better engaging employees. Not only have I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation, but, you know, as I mentioned earlier, this is really timely for the marketplace environment we're in, where so many people are thinking about making a change because they just don't feel connected with their organizations. So I think our executives and managers who listen to the show, there's a lot of value here for them to now go forward and work on better engaging their employees to be more profitable, to be more creative in the workplace and in the marketplace, and then, of course, ultimately to retain their valuable employees. So thank you again for joining us, and I look forward to talking to you again on the next in our series of podcasts on engaging employees.
Okay, thank you, Nathan, and thanks for you and your colleagues' good work there at Strategy Driven.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast. I would like to personally thank Michael Lee Stallard for being with us today and sharing his insights on how to better engage employees. As always, we would appreciate receiving your feedback by email at podcast@strategydriven.com. If you enjoyed the show, please consider voting for us on Podcast Alley and visiting our website at www.strategydriven.com. You can find more information about Michael Lee Stallard and his book, Fired Up or Burned Out, at www.epluribuspartners.com. Until next time, so long.